very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and to all our listeners tuning in from across the globe. Thank you for choosing Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju. And of course, you are listening to On the Reader News Analysis, your trusted space for informed updates, critical insights, and impact developments shaping Namibia's economic, social, and governance landscape. Now, of course, today is the 5th of November, 2025. It's a Wednesday. And as we step, of course, as we're continuing into a new week and a brand new month also, we continue doing what we do best, that is unpacking the stories that matter from governance to grassroots and from policy to the people. Now, of course, On the Reader News Analysis is your weekday guide to what matters most, bringing you the headlines behind the headlines every Monday to Friday from 1300 hours to 1430. Now, this show isn't just any other news show. On the Reader News Analysis, it's about depth and dialogue. It is where we interrogate the stories shaping our nation, asking the hard questions, revisiting past coverage, and connecting the dots through archived audio, expert commentary, and sharp analysis. That is from major policy decisions to everyday realities of Namibians. We bring you the full picture with context, clarity, and credibility. Now, remember, you can also catch us live always on the Reader News Analysis via the Eagle FM app, the Eagle FM frequency, or the Eagle FM website. Now, don't forget also to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for real-time updates, exclusive interview clips, and behind-the-scenes content. So as we kick off this new week, we continue in this brand new week, brand new month, and we step confidently into November. Now, stay tuned, stay curious, and always step beyond the surface. This is On the Reader News Analysis, when Namibia comes to think. Now, let's jump straight into today's top stories. The world today marks International Prosthetics and Orthotics Day, a global observation dedicated to raising awareness about the vital role of assistive technologies in improving lives. Now, the event was commemorated by the Ministry of Health and Social Services at the UN Plaza in Katutura, bringing together health professionals, rehabilitation specialists, and members of the public to recognize the importance of accessibility and innovation in prosthetic and orthotic care. Now, this day was established 3 years ago in November 2025 by the Prosthetics and Orthotics Society. Now, it seeks to highlight the need for inclusive healthcare systems that ensure access to assistive devices for all, particularly for persons with disabilities. Now, this year, the day is being celebrated under the global theme Products and Product Advancing Access, Innovation, and Quality. The theme emphasizes the need to develop and distribute high quality assistive products that are affordable, durable, and tailored to meet the diverse needs of users. Prosthetics are artificial limbs or body parts designed to replace missing arms, missing legs, or other body structures to help users regain movement and independence. Now, orthotics, on the other hand, involve the design and the fitting of braces, supports, and corrective devices that assist people with musculoskeletal or neurological conditions such as cerebral palsy, stroke, or spinal injuries. Now, experts say that these technologies not only restore mobility but also play a very crucial role in pain relief, posture correction, and long-term rehabilitation. For many individuals, prosthetics and orthotic devices make the difference between dependency and independence, allowing them to attend school or to attend work and also participate in social life with dignity. Now, speaking at the commemoration, representatives from the Ministry of Health and Social Services reiterated government's commitment to strengthening rehabilitation services and ensuring equitable access to assistive devices across Namibia. They also highlighted the ongoing challenges such as the limited funding, a shortage of trained prosthetics and orthotists, and the high cost of imported materials, which continue to affect service delivery, particularly in rural areas. Now, globally, the World Health Organization estimates that over 2.4 billion people currently live with a health condition that could benefit from rehabilitation, and at least 75 million people need prosthetics or orthotic device. Yet in many developing countries, only 1 in 10 individuals who require such devices have access to them. Now, joining us to discuss further on this is, of course, the ministry spokesperson, that is the Ministry of Health and Social Services, Mr. Walter Skamaya. Very good afternoon, Mr. Walter Skamaya.
Good afternoon to you too. Good afternoon to the listeners. It's a pleasure having you here.
Mm. Mr. Kamaya, of course, today the world comes together, and I would say the Ministry of Health and Social Services also comes together to celebrate International Prosthetics and Orthotics Day. Pardon me on that. Why is this day very significant? Perhaps not to those who need these devices, and to those who specially assist or have people who need these devices. Why it's very important, Mr. Kamaya?
Yes, thank you very much. We should all admit that prosthetic and orthotic, they are tongue-twisting words. So people should bear with us, but we'll try. Yes, as we were commemorating the day, and I'm happy the way you have explained it, that some of them, they are meant to replace the lost body parts, as well as some of them, they are serving as an assistive devices. The language that we used today, or maybe we may all aware that disability should not mean inability. Mm-hmm. The other way which was used is that no one should feel left out. So the reason why the Minister of Health and Social Services have joined the international community to commemorate this day is to see, to eat, and to reflect on the impact that the artificial limbs is trying to do in people with disabilities lives. Mm-hmm. We want to have everybody on board to be able to be integrated in the community, to be able to do something in the community in which they live. Mm-hmm. I recall very vividly one of the person who gave a testimony by the name of Kamati. She says that if it was not for these artificial limbs, she could have not get education. So as she was speaking, she says that now she is a mother, she is educated.
Imagine.
She is employed by the Minister of Finance. So she goes on to say that since her childhood, she has been using these artificial limbs. So this is the impact that we want everybody to be on par. So even those people that has disability, it cannot mean the inability. And then we also know that no one should be left out based on their economic status, based on their social worth. So that's why the Minister of Health and Social Services, we are trying to improve people's dignity. We are trying to improve people's rights. We are trying even to advance people's conditions to be on par with everybody.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, I think we only begin to realize and appreciate the importance of such devices, artificial limbs and braces that help, of course, fit on those devices on one's body. When you have a loved one or perhaps even a neighbor who has probably been in an accident, you know, maybe it's a very, I want to use this word, accident prone zone. Should I?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But of course, the human aspect comes into that. We play a huge role. I had 73% of accidents are caused by us humans, but really you begin to appreciate when you see a loved one having gotten an artificial limb or an artificial device or to help them with mobility better. You now see, appreciate the wisdom that comes, especially with those that makes this prosthetics. Just highlight to us also the need for such people who make such devices and also those who are properly trained, that it's lacking right here in Namibia, and the ministry's call for more people to go out and get trained in this aspect, Mr. Kamaya.
Yes, thank you very much. We want to appeal to our little youngs who want to pursue different careers in medical line, that they should also look at the prosthetic and orthotic to be part of their careers so that they are able to do something. And then as you rightly said, you know, today I learned to appreciate life and say that today it's them. There is no guarantee that you and I cannot follow suit tomorrow.
Yeah.
So as I was there, as we were commemorating the day, there was a friend of mine whom we have gone together to university. She was even walking. The other time I was on work mission going to the north. I met him in Shoprite, and I just want to bring this and how I appreciated life today.
Yeah.
And then I met him in Shoprite in Oshibarongo. He was walking.
Imagine.
Today when he called me, I could not recognize him. He was in a wheelchair, both feet being amputated. I asked him, my brother, what happened? The last time I saw you, the last time I gave you lift, I picked you. You were walking. He narrated his story to me. But the other issue is that I want to call upon each and every Namibian for us not to discriminate these people, for us not to stigmatize these people. It's not none of them's will to find themselves in such a condition. However, our role, we should encourage them. Our role, we should motivate them. Our role, we should be able to speak a better language that can install a sense of dignity in them and tell them that all is not lost. They can still live their normal lives. They can. I've seen even one who is going to participate in the running marathon. And then when he explains his story, it's also a touching one, that he was preparing to go for South Africa for athletics and so forth, but later when he was amputated. But the courage that this person has to say that he's even willing to take on another game again using this artificial leg. So you can see that this thing is something that is impacting the lives of our people. It's something that is changing the lives of our people. It's something that one person says, that through these services, without the Minister of Health and Social Services, we are nothing. But with these, we are able to participate in family activities such as funerals, such as weddings, because they are able to move, they are able to touch, they are able to do this and that on their own. And then when we have people around us who are able to do or to take care of themselves.
Mr. Kamaya, pardon me, just a commercial break quickly. Just stay on the line for me. Okay.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Okay, and we are back. I appreciate how you were talking about the importance of this devices and how they make one's life really better. Please continue.
Yes, thank you very much. I want to leave our people with a question to say that, have we imagined how difficult it is to take care of a person who cannot do anything for themselves?
Yeah.
So if these people cannot do anything for themselves, they become our burden. We also become grounded around them because we become their means of everything that they need to do. But if through these services, these people, they should be able to make their own terms, they should be able to get basics done for themselves. So this is the importance of this. And then this can only happen when the Minister of Health and Social Services work hand in hand with the community. So these people should come to our facilities. There are about 7 facilities that are giving those services. Chitmansop is one of them. Oshakati is one of them. Katima Mlilo is one of them. Vin Central is one of them. So these are places or facilities
Swakopmund
where
as well.
You can get it.
Yeah.
Swakopmund as
Irongo.
Well.
Yes, Irongo. Irongo is, yeah.
Yes, thank you. And then you can still add another one, you see.
Yes.
Those are the ones that I could remember.
Mm-hmm.
So we are encouraging and inviting people to go to those places. I know that resources might be a challenge, but definitely you will be on a list that after you have been attended to, there are conditions that can be molded and can be treated, then at the end, especially the club foot.
Yeah, yes.
This can be treated, and then at the end of the day,
yeah. If
diagnosed where the person is still growing, the person can get healed and live a normal life.
You know what? Let's do justice by talking about club foot. I've noticed that I think a lot of parents or some parents, okay, are very reluctant when they do see the feet of their children clubbing. And by clubbing, listeners, we mean, bending inwardly. I think some parents, either they do not know or why they are reluctant, I really don't understand, but they don't realize that there is a way to rectify that. Even if a child is born whereby their feet is clubbing or bending inwardly or just not as normal as it normally should be, please do know that the Ministry of Health has provision to actually correct some of this issues by also using then shoes, devices that help align. But say better on that, Mr. Kamaya, you are the better person to educate them.
Yes. Thank you very much. Sometimes, you know, you rightly put it to say, maybe out of ignorance, parents tend to ignore, thinking that when the child is growing, the situation will be better. But we want to tell the parents there that they should be able to visit our places, our facilities, as soon as they realize that there is a problem, to avoid the issue of saying you came late. But thinking that maybe the child is still young, and then you keep on doing this this mini what we call the massage, or what they used to do when the child has rickets, when they are moving there, they start threatening them a bit. So anyway, but for us, we say that we recommend that these people, they should be brought to our facilities for further assessment. And then thereafter, we can advise accordingly.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And I think for me, I would just really call out on the public, since you said we shouldn't discriminate these people, it becomes something you wonder, how do you actually mistreat somebody who knows needs help and needs actually your empathy? But yeah, I think I would just call on the public to say, if you do see somebody or do know somebody, or that person in your location, in your community, who then also makes use of prosthetics and orthotics or artificial devices and artificial limbs, please do give him the hug and say, you know what, today is your day and we celebrate you and we appreciate you. But yeah, thank you so much, Mr. Walter Skamaya, for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Sure, thank you very much. We shall talk again.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And there you had it from the spokesperson of the Ministry of Health and Social Services. And now, of course, as Namibia observes this day, it therefore serves as an important reminder of the country's ongoing efforts to make assistive technologies accessible to all who need them, and of the potential for innovation, you know, for partnerships and local manufacturing to bridge the gap in access and affordability. And I highlight that terminology, the local manufacturing. Would you believe it that some of these products, of course, some of them are made out of steel, but then some other ones are really made out of durable materials, soft materials, sort of like that should sort of have this texture of a normal skin, you know. And it's very appreciated by those who then lose perhaps an arm, you know, lose a limb, and therefore it becomes attached to them, and with sorts of devices, and they are able to touch again, they are able to walk again, they are able to really it improves mobility. So that's really what we're talking about when we are saying the world comes together to celebrate International Prosthetics and Orthotics Day. In other words, artificial limbs and braces and devices that help connect it. But nonetheless, this is on the Reading News Analysis, and with the aim is to educate you and inform you in layman terminology. But we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with more. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel
anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On the Radar News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, in other stories, a new waste buyback center is set to be constructed in Okuliangavar, marking a major step toward improving waste management and sustainability in the capital city. Now, speaking at the groundbreaking ceremony, Anna Beatrice Martens, the European Union ambassador to Namibia, highlighted the project's environmental significance. She said the center aims to reduce the ecological impact limited to municipal waste management while promoting sustainable practices. And I quote, this initiative supports the sustainable development goals by emphasizing effective solid waste management. Martens noted, as Windhoek continues to expand, the growing population and rapid urbanization are putting pressure on waste systems. It is vital to address the resulting environmental, health and aesthetic challenges. The project forms part of a broader partnership between the city of Windhoek and the German city of Berim and the European Union, funded through a 44 million Namibian dollar grant from the European Union. Now, the initiative was first launched 4 years ago and is now entering its implementation phase. Once completed, the buyback center is expected to create economic opportunities through recycling, enhance community involvement in waste reduction, and contribute to cleaner, more sustainable Windhoek. Of course, let's take a listen to Anna Beatrice Martens as she spoke at the event.
So I'm really delighted to be here to celebrate with you a significant milestone in the collaboration efforts of the two cities as we gather here in Okuliangavar, Tobias Hanyeko constituency, for this groundbreaking ceremony that we are all gearing up to already with our equipment for the buyback center, which is a vital component of the project Improving Solid Waste Management in Windhoek. So this project, funded with 44 million Namibian dollars of European grant from the EU, this initiative was launched 4 years ago, so it was started to be planned 4 years ago in partnership between the cities of Windhoek and Bremen. And its primary aim is to reduce the adverse environmental impact related to municipal waste management in line with the sustainable development goals that recognize the importance of high quality solid waste management. And it's also in line indeed, as said by the governor, with Namibia's own NDP6 and its ambition to reduce waste and improve the lives of its quality of life of its citizens. As Windhoek continues to grow, the management of solid waste is becoming ever more important. The rapid population growth and urbanization come with pressures on waste systems and the need to address environmental, health, and aesthetic challenges that go with it. Solid waste management is a global concern. This is not just a concern here for Windhoek or other big cities in Namibia. It is key to safeguarding public health and protecting our environment. The European Green Deal, which is our European roadmap to become emissions neutral by 2050, underscores our commitment to addressing these challenges by promoting circular economy practices that reduce greenhouse gas emissions and enhance recycling. And here, this is going to be a model for Namibia of a circular economy, as we have already seen further down the entry of Katutura. Our 35-year collaboration with Namibia is rooted in shared sustainable goals. Our cooperation focuses on foundational skills, good governance, gender equality, and inclusive green growth. Recent partnerships, such as a 2022 Memorandum of Understanding signed by late President Gengop and the European Commission President, Mrs. Ursula von der Leyen, further reinforce our commitment to innovation and green growth. The Waste Buyback Center, the two buyback centers, are part and parcel of these efforts. Empowering local authorities and strengthening governance are integral to our strategy. And local authorities play a key role in addressing challenges and facilitating community responses. Successful local governance hinges on listening to citizens and embracing innovation. The partnership between Windhoek, Bremen and the EU is such an example. I'm proud to have attended the inauguration of the first buyback center in April 24 last year. The city of Windhoek has assumed leadership in establishing the center and steering its processes. It is a model of public-private partnership that is already making a tangible difference to local communities. Not only has the exchange of recyclable materials for cash generated income for many people in this community, it has also introduced responsible waste separation in many households. And more, it has reduced waste in landfills, lowered greenhouse gas emissions, and fostered a cleaner urban environment. Thanks to the engagement of local communities, the first buyback center recorded about 9,000 drop-offs, and I think that also deserves a hand. 9,000 drop-offs to make the buyback center, bring the buyback center to reality and to work. The project has created green job creation, supported local entrepreneurship, and even served as educational program for schools and community groups to instill long-term behavioral change and civic pride. Let me congratulate all stakeholders involved and the unique partnership of the two cities for these noteworthy achievements that showcase circular economy in action. As we look forward to establishing another and the second waste buyback center, it remains crucial to ensure their sustainability. With these successful private-public partnerships, the exchange of expertise and promotion of environmental education, we must create a lasting impact for generations to come. And thank you, young ladies and boys of the primary school, of reminding us of who we are here for today, is to contribute to shaping a better future for the next generation. In conclusion, I extend my heartfelt gratitude to the city of Windhoek, especially to the team of the Solid Waste Management Department, the city of Bremen, and all stakeholders for their unwavering support and dedication. And let us work together to realize our vision of a cleaner and healthier city, and your worship, also to be a model and an inspiration for other countries in Africa of a clean and healthy city. Thank you very much.
And of course, now let's take a listen to the governor of the Commercer region, that is Sam Safishuna.
It's a wonderful thing that we are witnessing here today. This milestone reflects our shared commitment to environmental sustainability, economic empowerment, and social development within the Commerce region and our country at large. The Commerce region, a home to our capital city, Windhoek, continues to face the twin challenges of urbanization and unemployment, with a population exceeding 494,605 residents. The demand for services, infrastructure, sustainable livelihood opportunities continue to rise. Therefore, initiatives such as the Waste Buyback Center are not merely environmental projects. They are developmental catalysts that support our broader national goals. Ladies and gentlemen, these initiatives align strongly with Namibia's national development priorities, as outlined by the 6th National Development Plan, which places emphasis on sustainable economic growth, job creation, poverty eradication, and environmental protection. The Waste Buyback Center is a prime example of how these priorities are being translated into action at local level by promoting waste, segregation, recycling, and value addition. The project creates new opportunities for income generation and small businesses, particularly amongst our youth and women. This directly supports the government's agenda of building a green economy and fostering inclusive industrialization through innovative waste management practices. The second Waste Buyback Center builds upon this success and takes us a step further in our pursuit of a circular economy, where waste is viewed as a resource and a source of economic opportunity. Importantly, this initiative embodies the spirit of partnership between government, the private sector, the development partners, such as the European Union. Such collaborations are essential for achieving the Sustainable Development Goals, particularly goal number 8 on decent work and economic growth, and goal number 12 on responsible consumption and production. Director of Ceremonies, at regional level, the Office of the Governor remains committed to complementing the efforts of the City of Windhoek in implementing sustainable projects that improve the quality of life for our residents. Through initiatives like this one, we are advancing both the city's strategic plan and our regional development plan, which emphasize environmental stewardship, economic inclusion, and community participation. As we witness this groundbreaking today, let us be reminded that the waste is not the end of the value chain. It is the beginning of new possibilities and opportunities. Through innovation, partnerships, and community engagements, we can turn waste into wealth, create jobs, and move closer to our vision of a sustainable and prosperous commerce region. In conclusion, I wish to commend the City of Windhoek, the European Union, the Free and Scenic City of Bremen, and all development partners involved in making...
Okay, joining me in studio now is Michael Amushelelo, a very well-known activist. Michael, a very good afternoon to you, and thank you for joining us right here on the Reader News Analysis.
Good afternoon. Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Now, Michael, of course, we're talking about if recycling, you know, and a buyback center that is now set to be constructed in Okolongava can be really a game changer for the people's livelihoods, you know, in terms of economy and also just advancing ourselves. And I think I reached out to you specifically because I saw you put up on your Facebook page talking about if you are seated at home and have nothing to do, you can start collecting rubbish or returnable empty bottles to go and sell, and that's something that you have yourself been doing. Just kindly get into that for us. First, your aspect of how you have been able to get some money back in terms of waste, and yeah.
Okay, so there's a famous saying that says someone's trash is someone's treasure. Now, that thing is very true because, you see, when people consume whatever it is that they consume, whether it's cool drink, beer, or whatever.
Mm.
There are certain bottles that are basically what we call returnables. That simply means these bottles have value in the sense that they are washed and then they are reused to obviously add whatever was consumed out of it.
Mm.
Now, for years, this thing has been going on where people literally collect bottles that people throw away and then others go and return those bottles. And then obviously there's a fee for returning this particular bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, in recent years, the City of Windhoek has initiated something through the EU where you can literally collect paper, trash cans.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, aluminium cans have big money.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know this. Yes, there's big money in aluminium because those cans are made from aluminium.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure what the other elements are, but aluminium is like one of the most expensive products that you can find on the market.
Yeah.
So people literally crush those aluminium cans, obviously stack them up,
mm-hmm.
and then they obviously take them and then they await, and then based on how much your waste is weighing, you then obviously get paid accordingly to that. Now, number one, this has two benefits.
Yeah.
Number one is a direct benefit for the community because now you don't have litter because people literally know that, hey, if I throw away this paper is actually money. So why not collect these papers in plastic bags or whatever it is, and then go and give these papers in, and then I actually get paid for cleaning my environment or your community or your area or whatever the case is. So this is actually not only a brilliant initiative, but there's actually money to be made from this industry.
Yeah.
Now, just to give you some shocking numbers.
Okay, please do.
In 2023-2024, the recycling industry, this is worldwide now,
mm-hmm.
was valued at about $58.53 billion.
Mm.
If I have to do a normal conversion into our currency, that's almost about $1,000 trillion Namibian dollars.
Yeah.
I don't know if people ever heard of $1,000 trillion. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So how much of that market share do we as Namibians basically have? We almost have small market, because the problem is the waste that is being collected here, we obviously package it, crush it, and then send it to South Africa, because South Africa have the machinery to turn back this cans into proper cans. So what we need to do is we must now go beyond only the collection, but we must also now create the industries whereby plastic waste, we are able to convert it into plastic cans, plastic bags, and many of those other products that are made from plastic. The same with the bottles. Namibia doesn't have one single bottle manufacturing company. Yet we've got so many companies that either do brewing, and those beers are either ordered from, I don't know, South Africa, Angola, or wherever it is. But how come if Namibia is such a strong nation that consumes those things, why is the government or whoever not bring up a deliberate effort to say, colleagues, because you own this industry where you put used bottles, why don't you put up a bottle?
Even plastic bottles.
That produces plastic bottles as well. Because remember, we've gone plastic on most of the consumables, as well as for paper. I mean, let's look at the carton milk boxes that are used for yogurt and all this, or chikandelas, all those products. You see, if you look at them, they all have a specific name, meaning that they're all produced by one particular company, which is from South Africa. But yet we produce that waste. Instead of that waste being reconverted into some of these products, it seems to me we're literally sleeping, because we do not seem to understand the depth of this waste that we are being that we're producing.
Mm.
So there are companies that deal in waste management. These companies literally make tons of millions
actually
yearly from collecting waste here in Namibia and then selling it in South Africa. Because what we're not understanding, we are at the receiving end. Because these people who are buying these things from you, ask them, why are they buying your waste? It's because there's obviously a market where they're going to sell it for a much more higher profit than what they are obviously offering you. So that is why we need to control the whole entire value chain, because Namibia as a country, we obviously produce a considerable amount of waste. But the problem with the waste that we produce, we don't recycle it. It ends up in what is called landfills. Now, landfills, for those people who don't understand, we literally dig massive holes in the land, and then we bury this waste.
Bury the
but
money.
This waste, we are burying money, literally.
Yeah.
So this is a big industry that can actually come from this whole thing. But I think we must start with these initiatives, and we must commend initiatives like that. And obviously, we must be able to educate the community in terms of the benefits of waste collections and all of these many things.
I like that. We must be able to educate the community on the benefits of this. Now, let's get back
because,
to the...
There's a famous saying that in Zambia or Zimbabwe, they found diamonds in this particular town. Now, the people, because they didn't know the value of those diamonds, they were literally trading those diamonds for Coca-Cola. Imagine giving a diamond to someone and someone is giving you Coca-Cola. So that is basically what is happening with our waste. The reason why people don't care whether the environment is clean and all of this things is because we have not done the proper education. I mean, I'm seated literally right now in front of a school, and the amount of waste that I'm seeing in front of the school, it saddens me, because what are we teaching our children in schools?
Yeah.
Because they ought to have understood to say, you must not litter. If you're going to do so, then find bins or find a place where you can literally throw them. And then also as a city, back in the days, I remember very well, every street pole almost had a bin.
today it's no longer the case.
Yeah.
So sometimes we must also be able to say we must have enough places where we are able to obviously litter or put our rubbish. But in the absence of those things, someone carrying a Coke bottle after they're done consuming it, if they see there's nowhere to throw it, mm-hmm. they'll literally throw it in the street. Mm-hmm. So I think we must be able to create that education, and we must also have places where people can literally put their waste. And if initiatives like this, where people can literally be encouraged to start picking up the waste that others are creating and obviously generate an income for themselves, initiatives like that must be commended and must be supported.
Absolutely. Must be commended. Let's get back to the numbers. And I think this time, let's bring it closer to home. You did speak about a returnable empty bottle. You get paid as little as $2 Namibian per bottle. And if you can collect about 1,000 bottles per month, that's $2,000 that you can potentially earn. I think we as these people, and I appreciate how you say people need to be educated. I think really we need to educate the people, and I think not just city of Windhoek that's responsible for that, but rather as a whole in terms of educating the community on the importance of really reusing or recycling this product. But something that's coming into my mind, Amushelelo, is that perhaps maybe, because I do see some women and men, especially in the evening on that particular day when the waste is to be picked up, the very next day, they'll come in the evening into our households and be scrapping in the dustbins. Perhaps maybe if, what do you think about perhaps the city of Windhoek putting up dustbins that are written, this is for paper, this is for plastic bottles, this is for, things like that to make it more easier for us, you know, and make it easier for them that go and sell those products. What do you think?
No, obviously that would be a good initiative. Now, what must be understood is that those people who usually go and scrape in our dustbins,
yeah.
that is the level of poverty that our people live in.
Because I tell you.
When they go, obviously, to those houses, some of us will obviously live better. Now and then we've got old things like a pair of shoes you don't need anymore. Instead of obviously taking it somewhere to donate it to someone, you literally throw it away. So our dustbins have become treasures of other people, because you find someone, maybe they ate KFC last night, and because obviously today they prepared for themselves lasagna or whatever, they literally throw that KFC away. So those people come and they're like, hey, a whole KFC. When last did I eat KFC? Mm. Then they obviously literally eat or live off of other people's dustbins.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously part of the reason why they do that is because they want to collect the cans and they want to collect anything that is of value that they could be able to resell. Mm. So that is why I'm saying that initiatives like this buyback of waste and all of that, we must be able to support them wholeheartedly. We must be able to obviously reinforce the education in schools, because right now you literally go everywhere. The city is just filthy.
Yeah.
And the city is filthy as a result because no one anymore takes pride in having a clean environment.
And especially in Havana.
This phenomenon, it doesn't matter. You can literally go in town. It's not even just especially in Havana. It's everywhere now. There's no more a thing where we've got this pride in just having cleanliness. Like, no one, it's like, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we call a broken window syndrome. You see, when you find a house where there's one window that's broken and you don't fix it, the next day someone else literally just goes and break another window because they're like, this window, it seems to me it's a thing. So the reason why the city is now currently dirty is because we have allowed the phenomena where the city, you can litter and nothing literally happens to you. I mean, there are laws that are on littering, but those laws, for some or other reason, we don't enforce them. I mean, go to Elisenheim.
Yeah.
If you think the litter is only in Havana.
Mm.
The people constructing there, they literally go throw their waste almost close to the riverbed. And I ask myself to say, this ought to be some educated people,
mm-hmm.
people who are obviously supposed to be, I mean, if you live in that means you've reached a certain threshold of income and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But for them to be throwing trash away like that clearly means that there's either weak enforcement in terms of those littering laws and all of that, or people simply do not care.
I hear you, Amushelelo. Your last words as we come to the end of our discussion right now.
It's a pleasure.
That's all?
I'm saying it was a pleasure.
Okay, cool. Amshanulu, thank you so much for making time for us right here. I'm sure somebody at home listening will definitely take your words and your sentiments to heart.
Thank you. Enjoy your day.
Okay.
And please make sure you throw away your rubbish in the bin.
I certainly do that.
To come collect it so I can go make
money. I'll make my own money. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Okay, cool.
Bye.
Yeah, bye. And there you had it from Michael Amshalolo. Now, of course, a buyback center is more than just a recycling station. It's a community empowerment hub where waste is transformed into opportunity. Now, here's how one can actually become a true game changer for livelihoods. Of course, at the core of buyback center is simple but powerful idea of 10 waste into money. Now, residents can collect recyclable materials such as bottles, cans, plastic paper, and scrap metal and sell them to the center for cash, and this provides a steady source of income for unemployed youth, informal waste collectors, and low-income families who may otherwise struggle to find work. Now, what was once considered trash now becomes a very valuable resource that can help put food on the table. Also, it helps support local entrepreneurs as the center encourages small businesses to grow. Entrepreneurs can build micro enterprises around waste, for instance, by sorting recyclables, transporting them, or creating products like eco bricks, crafts, or reusable bags. By linking waste to enterprise, the Buyback Center promotes entrepreneurship, innovation, and job creation in communities that need it most. Now, for somebody sitting at home, I know for me, especially when I was at school, and I think it was high school, we were taught about, and I think that's why I have this thought always in my mind when it comes to waste management about recycling. We're taught those three R's in recycle, which stands for reduce, reuse, and recycle. Now, while reuse comes before recycle, those are three core principles of waste management, and they are listed in the order of their priority. First, it's reduce the amount of waste you create. Second, it's to reuse the items instead of throwing them away. And finally, recycle the materials into new products. You know that your lotion bottle or lotion, let's say that lotion package that the way your lotion comes in. You know how beautiful some of those things, items really are, and perhaps maybe sometimes you look at the ones from Clicks and whatnot, and you see how really beautiful they are. And once your lotion is done, all you have to do is throw it away. You know, sometimes it comes to me to say, imagine these are such beautiful bottles that can be used. Now, for another person sitting at home, they can actually decide, you know what, I'll be collecting this from people's households, and I'll perhaps decorate them and sell them. And there's so much ways that you can actually think about in terms of, you know, making use of this waste. It's not supposed to be the end chain, you know. That's not supposed to be the end of the chain. You can go further with it in terms of waste, collecting waste and going to sell it back, or yourself turning into something of craft for those who are very good at such type of stuff. So it's a very interesting topic, I think, that needs to be further explored. But then you sitting at home, you can also make better research on it. Perhaps also call upon the city of Windhoek on how you yourself can actually empower yourself in terms of economic wise. You know, sometimes really we are sitting on the money and we can really turn something into our waste. But with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, you are tuned into On The Radar News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, should you want to also share opinions or contributions, the studio number is very much open. 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana konongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendike nawa nokumona oijemo ili nawa ninge kwa tafanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa vera hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for news beyond the borders. Of course, we're starting off with the Namibian currency compared to other currencies. Now today, $1 will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 31 cents. That's 17 Namibian dollars and 31 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars and 55 cents. One Swiss franc is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 36 cents. And one Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 21 cents. €1 on the other hand is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 6 cents. And our neighboring Botswana pula is equals to $1.28. Now for that, we move over to trading economics. The seasonally adjusted unemployment rate in Ireland edged down to 5% in October 2025. That is from an upwardly revised 5.1% in the previous month. Now the number of unemployed persons decreased by 1,700 month on month, reaching 147,400. By gender, the unemployment rate for males ticked lower to 5% from a revised 5.1% in September, while the rate for females remained unchanged at 5%. Now looking at age groups, the unemployment rate for people aged 15 to 24 years rose slightly to 13.4% from a revised 13.3% in the prior month. Ghana's annual inflation rate fell to an over 4-year low of 8% in October 2024 from 9.4% in September, marking the 10th consecutive period of slowing price growth. Now, inflation has now converged to Bank of Ghana's 8% target range, which has a 6-10% tolerance band, now supported by favorable exchange rate movement. The credit has lurried almost 35% this year on the back of strong cocoa and gold prices. Food inflation eased to 9.5% compared with 11% in September, while non-food food price growth cooled 6.9% from 8.2%. Now, on a monthly basis, the CPI fell by 0.4% after a 0.9% increase in the prior month. Industrial producer prices in the euro area fell 0.1% month on month in September 2025, marking a second consecutive decline and defying expectations for a flat reading driven primarily by lower energy prices, which slipped 0.2% after a sharper 1.5% decline in August. Now, prices were unchanged for both intermediate and capital goods, while durable consumer goods rose 0.3%, rebounding from a 0.1% fall, and non-durable consumer goods edged up 0.1%. Now, on an annual basis, producer prices decreased 0.2%, following a 0.6% drop in August, in line with market expectation. Now, of course, that's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, when we do return, News Beyond the Borders is coming your way.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida Ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuana Ononge shefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda do inawa nune udo otukwetera o special ange tashake ngejepa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa mbura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288.
Nou, President Cyril Ramaphosa.
Goeie nuus. Imba het nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinte nuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. Is jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Imba te geniet? Kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get the best for less at USave. 2 kilograms Omaeta cultured milk, just 48.99 Namibian dollars. 2 liters of Rietfontein nectar juice, just 34.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams of King Poloni, just 24.99 Namibian dollars. Knorr packet soup, 30 Namibian dollars for any 5. That's just 6 Namibian dollars each. Take a break with Nestle Kit Kat chocolates, just 10.99 Namibian dollars. And a 2 liter Co-E cool drink, only 12.99 Namibian dollars. USave, your low budget grocery store. Where good food costs less.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili.
And our news view on the borders of Namibia, you know, we always start off regionally and then move over to continental news. Thereafter, we bring you some international news. Now, of course, we're starting off in South Africa in regards to global wealth inequality being higher than income inequality. Let's take a listen and understand this report.
Says the G20 Inequality Committee report provides a very clear guideline on how the G20 countries should address inequalities. So this report about global inequalities was officially handed over to Ramaphosa yesterday by a panel of experts he established to probe the main causes of inequalities globally. The report's findings reveal that wealth inequality is far higher than income inequality globally. Between 2000 and 2024, the richest 1%, listen to this, the richest 1% captured 41% of all new wealth, while the bottom half of humanity received just 1%. To further unpack the report, we are joined in studio by the G20 expert task force member, Professor Imran Velodia. He's from the director of the Southern Center for Inequality Studies, the pro-vice chancellor at the University of the Witwatersrand. It is a pleasure to have you, and thank you so very, very much for being with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Frightening results contained in this. Perhaps nothing that we didn't know, however, it's now on paper and we know the facts are out there. I want to, before we even get into the findings, just talk a little bit about the commissioning of this by the president.
Yeah, so one of the themes for the G20 is inequality. Our president, as the president of the G20 for this year, appointed the committee to prepare the report for him. We've done our task now, and we handed the report to the president yesterday. The brief was to look at inequality across the globe, and to make really assess the evidence, to look at what are the things driving inequality, to propose solutions, and all of that's in. In the report, the report's in the public domain. It's there for everyone to read.
Yeah, and sobering reading, I must say. I mean, inequality is central to global growth, and I think we all know this. And development and stability. Countries are no longer worried about limiting poverty, but also about the growing gap within societies, as well as between countries, because that is what we're noticing as well. Talk to us a little bit about this. I mean, how is that situation looking?
Yeah, we look in the report at what are the things that are driving this this rise in inequality, and I think the statistic that you mentioned really captures how bad the problem is. I think we make the recommendation in the report that there's two broad elements to how we should think about the trends driving this. The first is a set of issues at the international level. And here there's issues like intellectual property. There's issues such as the international trading system, etc., which is driving inequality among countries of the world. Mm. The second is a pattern at the national level, and here there's issues such as elites being able to capture a large part of the income and the wealth at the national level. And I think in our report we suggest that governments do have a choice in this, that the international community does have a choice about it, and we make some suggestions for how we should deal with this.
Which I want to get to shortly, but I want to get the distinction here between income and wealth inequality, because there is a distinction. How do these two interact, and why is wealth inequality so much harder to actually tackle?
Okay, so we should think about income as a flow that comes from the work that you do or the investments you make, etc. Whereas a much more complete view of inequalities, inequality in wealth, it really tells us how much assets you have, how much investments you have, etc. Part of the issue that we raise in this report is that although income inequality is extremely high, inequality in wealth is much more serious, and yeah. we should be a lot more concerned about it.
And we should be, because what I'm reading.
Let's move over to Zambia. We Southern chiefs in Zambia have proposed 2-term limit for elected leaders.
3.1.5. The fighting of fresh nominations when somebody resigns. The Royal Highness is of the view that elections must go ahead if the person resigned. We are of the view that elections should go ahead with those that have remained on the ballot or have not resigned.
submissions by chiefs in Southern Province to the Tekenko Committee on Amendments to the Zambian Constitution. The chiefs, through their provincial chairperson, Chief Nalubamba, have proposed two-term limits for all elected officials from the president to councillors.
So currently the president's term limits are limited to two. So the Royal Highness say that that should continue. And then the Royal Highness has also proposed that the constitution should enshrine that the tenure for members of parliament should be two terms, and then also for mayors, council chairpersons and councillors to allow other people to aspire for these offices, and then also that we maintain the grade 12 certificate requirement.
The chiefs are also saying no more too costly by elections.
The seat that is left vacant, they will have a replacement through within the party that won that seat, and then we have elections within that particular party.
The traditional leaders have also made submissions on the offices of attorney and solicitor generals, secretary to the cabinet and permanent secretary.
The Royal Highnesses are submitting that the position of attorney general, solicitor general, should be senior civil servants who rise through the rank and file. Their job is to advise government per se, not a political party that is in office. So they are staying. Their job should not be tied to the end of a particular head of state's tenure. What prevails currently that the Secretary of Cabinet should have 10 years of experience at the level of a PS or senior civil servant should actually be maintained. The position of permanent secretary as well should be a professional position, and a civil servant who rises through the ranks to become permanent secretary, so that government can have a pool of people who they can call upon to become secretary of the cabinet, because they've got the experience they've gathered by working in cabinet for a long time.
Tekenko Committee team leader Eva Jala has assured the chiefs that their submissions are in safe hands.
We have taken a printout of your submissions, and we shall seriously consider them, ensure that most of them will see the light of day in some form or the other, be it within this terms of reference or a recommendation to the president for future reforms of our constitution.
Justin Akakuluberwa, ZNBC News, Choma District.
Meanwhile, the Ministry of Works partners up with road safety activists that is in Uganda.
We receive about 800 cases of trauma arising from accidents. That's about 60% of our casualties arise from road traffic accidents, about 800. 30% are critically ill. 40%, yes, they are very sick. They could easily topple into critical illness, and about 30% are mildly ill. And out of that, the lion's share is taken by the orthopedics and neuro, bones and head injury. Costs of treating a critically ill patient per day without surgery could come to about 3.5 million shillings.
Per day?
Per day.
One
critically
patient?
Ill, yes, one patient. And that is either shared between the patient and government, depending on the availability of resources, or rather the patient might end up taking the burden.
This is a health crisis. 5,144 people. Okay, that's too much. 14 people every day. That's a health crisis. But what are we doing? Every hospital that we visited, and we visited hospitals in the west, in the east, in the north, and here, even here, right here where we are in Murago, the doctors will tell you the numbers are overwhelming us. The report that came out from the Health Committee of Parliament, they told you how much we are spending every day. That's money that could be going to make our schools better. That's money on avoidable expenses. And let's not continue making this accident of calling what happens on the roads accidents. They are not accidents. They are road crashes which are preventable. An accident will give you an impression that it's beyond our means. It's only God who can stop it. No. We know this can be stopped. So come, let's join our hands together. What we have before us, the issue of road safety, is a big monster. We need all hands on deck. So join us today of six people, and join us on 15th November. We'll set off at 6 a.m. at Sheraton Hotel, and let's walk together this journey in memory of those who have perished and have been injured in road crashes, and also take the opportunity to raise the banner and say, we need safe roads because safe roads save lives.
As a ministry, we are really proud to associate with Joe Walker. And Joe is a typical example that road safety is not for only certain agencies, but it is for all of us. Everyone can actually play a part in whatever field you are in, and you can make a contribution.
Child exploitation persists amid conflict in South Sudan.
Children in South Sudan face widespread exploitation, ranging from cattle herding to armed conflicts. Boys are often recruited as fighters. Many young girls under 18 are forced into marriage, according to the government study released with Save the Children.
To ensure that no child is forced to work, we have to increase their chances in education. We have to improve livelihoods for the families and to making South Sudan a country where all children can grow up safe, educated, and full of possibility.
The findings reveal that children in urban areas are increasingly exposed to forced labor, sexual exploitation, drug abuse, and theft.
The report further says caregivers' awareness does not guarantee protection for the children involved, with the survey finding over 70% of children involved in Azada's work came from households where caregivers were aware of child labor laws.
Only 33% of the children surveyed across more than 400 households were aware of any existing protection or support services available in their area.
Meanwhile, Morocco boosts fertilizer production in order to strengthen global food security.
Morocco holds over 70% of the world's known phosphate reserves, making it a global powerhouse in fertilizer production. OCP Group is a leading global fertilizer and the largest global producer of phosphate rock and phosphoric acid that has been in operation for a century. Rather than exporting raw phosphate, the North African Kingdom is increasingly investing in processing and industrial diversification, producing fertilizers and high-value chemicals.
The growing global demand for phosphate has led to a significant growth in production and revenues. This is also the result of a strategic approach of the OCP Group. It focuses on reducing the presence of raw phosphate while diversifying refined and semi-refined phosphate products like fertilizers. The OCP Group is also investing in industrial complexes for phosphate refining in several African and Asian countries.
Authorities in Rabat are hopeful that the synergy between mining and agriculture could serve as a growth catalyst, combining export earnings, generating strong foreign currency inflows, while creating skilled jobs for Moroccan youths.
The phosphate and extraction industries in Morocco play a key role in implementing the strategic vision of our industrial transition. The growth of these vital sectors impacts positively the automotive and other industries. This transition will trigger an unprecedented growth of the OCP Group and the Moroccan economy.
Experts say phosphate and fertilizer production play a critical role in achieving global food security, as they directly influence agricultural productivity, soil health, and the world's ability to feed a growing population. The core challenge facing the industry, however, is how to meet growing demand for phosphate in a sustainable way.
The OCP Group is enhancing its capabilities by launching new production lines, contributing to the continuity of global food supplies, reinforcing the role of the group in Morocco as a key player in achieving global food security. The successful business model and good performance boost the kingdom's economic dynamic.
OCP continued to secure major financing to back its $13 billion green investment program. In April 2025, the group raised $1.75 billion in an international bond issuance split across 5 and 10 years tranches. Adnan Shaweshi, CGTN.
Meanwhile, Tanzania eyes stronger growth as normalcy returns.
Tanzania's President Dr. Samia Suluhu Hassan secured over 97% of the vote in the October 29th election. Her focus now, she says, is on developing the nation.
Our gathering here today is not to reward those who won the election, but rather it's the handing over of the mantle of being the chief servant of the nation, one who will bring about sustainable development in terms of economic, political, diplomatic, and social stability.
Now, with the lifting of security measures, businesses and workers in both the public and private sectors are slowly returning to normal. As residents of Dar es Salaam focus on reopening their businesses, the government, in power for a second term, is looking to implement its election manifesto, which, among other things, targets 7% annual economic growth. Analysts suggest that this ambitious goal will be critical in boosting the economy and lifting the country from its lower middle income status. For many Dar es Salaam residents, their hopes for the next 5 years remain focused on economic progress.
I expect great success now that business is back to normal. So, in essence, success is what we expect, and a lot of it.
I'll be grateful to God for what I'm thinking and planning. I'd like to own my own home in the next 5 years under President Samia.
President Hassan intends to outline her full agenda for the next 5 years when the country's parliament opens in the coming weeks. Isaac Lukando, CGTN, Dar es Salaam.
Meanwhile, protests paralyzed Cameroon's economic capital.
Business has been slow in Douala since the beginning of the post-election crisis and demonstrations. For Esom Raphael, a taxi driver, customers have become hard to find.
Since the elections, there has been nothing. It is only today, Saturday, that things are starting to move a little bit. There has been nothing since the 12th until today.
Food prices have skyrocketed in the market. Everything has become expensive because blocked roads and protests have made it difficult for people to get around. This makes access to basic goods difficult in the economic capital.
No one wants to be in this situation. It's really difficult. You see how everything is going up. While all these things are happening, everything is going up. Gas, tomatoes, everything, 200 to 500 francs. That doesn't suit us. It's not good. We don't want a situation like this, really. If we had a choice, we shouldn't accept this situation. But we don't know. How it is today just happens like that.
For Raphael and many others, this is a call to those in power to recognize the plight of the common man.
The current government in 43 years has not brought about any fundamental change. So what we expect is for the situation to be remedied, peace to be restored, and the population to be respected as citizens.
As a consequence of the protests, government offices are operating at a much slower pace. The city's universities and other institutions are paralyzed.
Of the university, things are at a standstill. The offices are open, the duty roster is in place, but the students are not currently attending classes.
Opposition leader Issa Chiroma has called for 3 days of so-called ghost towns across the country. But fears arrive in Douala, already hard hit by the protests, that the impact will only get worse.
Given the informal nature of our country, there are many people, that is more than the majority, who live from hand to mouth and are forced to go out every day to earn their income. Being confined to their homes has caused great harm both to them and their families.
An urgent intervention through a revival of major public works projects is seen as one way out of the economic crisis.
We are not going to relaunch major public works projects while calling on foreigners to come and do the work. In other words, all the money generated by the multiplier effect will go back to these people. so relaunching major public works projects through nationals.
For a number of days, calls for ghost towns have been honored in the country's major cities. This has impacted trade between Cameroon and the Central African Republic, which uses Cameroon's ports as a gateway for imports and exports. Sophia Shimichero, CGTN.
China's import-export breaks record.
Back in 2018, Chinese President Xi Jinping said at the opening ceremony of the first session of the event that the China International Import Expo was a major decision made by the country to pursue a new round of high-level opening up and a major new initiative to further widen market access to the rest of the world. And indeed, the expo has successfully fulfilled its mission. The previous seven sessions of the CIIE have attracted over 180 countries and regions and international organizations to participate. 31 countries have been guest country of honor. A total of 23,000 overseas exhibitors have taken part, and nearly 3,000 new products, technologies, and services have been showcased. The intended transaction volume has climbed nearly every year, rising 38% from the first to the seventh session. This year, the 8th Expo is set to create new records. It covers an area of 430,000 square meters, roughly 60 football fields. After playing host to a large legion of 3,496 companies last year, the Expo has attracted 600 more this year, a total of 4,108 companies, a record in the event's history. 90 of them are Fortune Global 500 companies or industry leaders. Notably, 170 overseas companies and 27 organizations have been fixtures, attending all the 8 sessions. This year's session has also set up a special zone for products from the least developed countries, which enjoy China's zero tariff treatment. Featuring 6 major exhibition zones for consumer goods, medical care, agricultural products, cars, services trade, and equipment, and an additional innovation incubation zone this year, the CIIE has been a launch pad for new technologies, providing a stage for first-timers. This year, more than 460 new products and services will be shown, ranging from low-altitude, humanoid robots, AI, and low-carbon industries. Meanwhile, hearing aids from Sonova Group, kiwi fruit from New Zealand, and cherries from Spain will make their debut. 8 years in existence, the expo is a resounding example of China's unremitting efforts to open its market.
Now, ahead of the expo, Shanghai launched pre-expo promotion activities. Let's take a look.
The first batch of exhibits for the 8th CIIE has arrived at the main venue in Shanghai. The exhibits primarily include medical devices and healthcare products, technological equipment, food and agricultural products, all of which are either globally or regionally premier showcases of new products.
Among the 18 new products we are introducing this year, 9 are world premieres, with over 60% of the new products featuring Chinese innovations or developed by Chinese research and development teams.
During this year's CIIE, nearly 50 specialized activities integrating CIIE elements will be held, aimed at introducing more high-quality global products into the Chinese market. Data indicates that China's fruit import value reached $17.7 billion in 2024, a reflection of the ongoing optimization of the exhibits-to-products mechanism at the CIIE.
Throughout the year, we engage with export enterprises from over 40 countries and regions. The platform of the China International Fruit Expo facilitates the faster transformation of exhibits into commercial products, allowing more consumers to access the latest product releases.
Additionally, Shanghai also launched the CIIE Consumption Map and a series of supporting policies, providing both domestic and international consumers with a one-stop information platform for high-quality import products. Zhang Yuan, CGTN.
Now, exhibitors at the 8th China International Import Expo say they hold high expectations for the event, as well as for the Chinese market. They express appreciation for China's continued innovation and also its economic opening up.
The advantage of the CIIE is also that we can bring really the latest technologies that we are
about to launch or have recently launched. In 2 years or 3 years ago, we launched the photon counting CT in China. And we're now bringing the entire photon counting CT family to the market. So I think the Chinese market is a very, very important one. We keep on investing. I think next to Germany, China is the country where we have the most factories and the highest grade of localization. And we do this because we see a huge future for China. Again, not only because of the Chinese markets per se, but also because of the innovation that is coming from here.
I think first, we are really honored to join the CIE again for the 8 years. It's really an exciting year to really looking forward to it. We are committed here in China. We are confident in this market. At the same time, we'll also be doing a lot of collaborations in this forum. I think it's an opportunity to have gather everyone together to dialogue and talk about important topics in the society. For example, the elderly topic, the sustainability topic.
This year marks the 8th consecutive year that Novartis has participated in CIIE. China is driving higher level of opening up and high quality development. And CIIE plays a central role in this process. As a national level exhibition, it offers a unique platform to showcase innovation, foster collaboration, and engage with stakeholders across the entire ecosystem.
And of course, that has brought us to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Reading News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkana Nadingi program brought to you by Matthias Hangara. And of course, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30. Thereafter, you can expect the business economic segment from 1800 hours. Now from Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful Wednesday afternoon. I'll see you again next time.